Good morning. It's 7:02. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. That was Rachel McShane and the Cartographers from their album When All Is Still. And we heard Waltzing at Giggleswick, yes, and the Ginger Cat Monster. And if you want to know where Giggleswick is, head to the north of England. And that just came out on Topic Records. And before that, we heard Emmeline Stamm and Filippo Gambetta on Borealis Records, giving us Shorelines, their title track, and Florence Lake from their new album, Shorelines. It is 7:02. You are listening to WMFO in Medford. And as I mentioned, this is my last show on the 6 to 8 a.m. Monday morning. Henceforth, I will be alternating with DJ Easy Ed and his wonderful rockabilly show. And it will be Celtic Evening and Between the Worlds every other Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. And as I get older, yes, I love being able to sleep in and not have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. Well, for those of you who have managed to catch the last couple of shows, you know that we are profiling Dave the Bard's wonderful album that has just come out about the second branch of the Mabinogi. And this is, of course, the tale of Vran and Vranwen and how the ravens come to be at the Tower of London. So we're going to hear the end of the first disc, and then a couple of songs from the second. And here we go.
At that time, the sea between Albion and Ireland was not wide, and Bran, who was of such a high stature, could wade across. Bran strode across the waters, carrying all of the stringed instruments and bards upon his back, and together we made for the shores of Ireland.
Side.
Matholwch gathered together all of the warriors of Ireland and of those all along the coast, and took counsel. It was decided that the only sensible course of action was to retreat quickly across the Liffey and place the great river between the Irish and the army of the Island of the Mighty, and then to destroy the bridge. Lodestones covered the riverbed, and thus no ship could ever sail across. So they retreated and burned down the only bridge. We arrived at the shore of the Liffey. The waters were too deep, the current too strong to simply wade across this time. Bran looked out and saw the armies of the Irish gathered across the river. "Lord," one of his nobles said, "this river is a mighty obstacle. No ship can sail across it, and there is no bridge. There is no way to reach the enemy. How can we cross the waters?" Then something caught Bran's eye. An alder tree that must have come adrift somewhere upstream and fallen into the river floated on the current past Bran's army. It came to rest just before him, then continued its journey out to sea. We all watched as Bran walked to the edge of the river. Then, with purpose, he fell forward, his hands just reaching the shore on the other side, his mighty body spanning the entire Liffey. "He who is a chief, let him be a bridge." Hurdles were placed upon him, and the warriors of the Island of the Mighty marched across his back, and we reached the other side. Bran arose, and I saw for the first time the shadow of the great raven falling upon the earth of Ireland. Already, Matholwch's messengers had reached him, and they approached the High King and greeted him. They told Bran that Matholwch wished nothing but good will come his way, that he would bestow the kingship of Ireland to Gwern, son of Matholwch, Bran's sister's son, and the coronation would take place in the presence of Bran himself. This, all to make amends for the unjust injury that was done to his sister, Branwen. As for Matholwch himself, Bran could make provision for him either here in Ireland or in the Island of the Mighty. Bran shook his head. "If I cannot have the kingship myself, maybe I should take counsel on this. But until you bring me a better offer, you will get no answer from me." The messengers agreed. They asked that Bran made no rash attack, but instead waited for a better offer after they had relayed his words to the High King. "Be sure that you return quickly," was all he said. When the messengers told of Bran's response, Matholwch asked what they would recommend. They suggested that Bran had never been able to fit inside a house, and that they build him one big enough for him to do so, large enough not only for Bran, but for all his army to fit in one side, and all of the Irish army to be housed in the other. They suggested that he placed his kingship at Bran's disposal and pay homage to him. Such a gift was sure to bring peace between Bran and Matholwch. The messengers returned with their offer and spoke with Bran, he took advice from his council and from Branwen herself, who was fearful that any battle would lay waste to the entire country. Bran decided to accept the terms, and thus the house was built. But little did we know that the Irish had a treacherous plan. Behind each of the 100 pillars that held the vast roof of that giant house, they had placed a peg. From each peg, they hung a bag, and within each bag was a fully armed warrior. I was told of this treacherous plan many years later, and just as Gwaul had been beaten within the bag in the court of Hefeith Hen many years before, so the darkness and womb-like quality of the bag once more enters our story. As fate befell, the first person to enter the house was Evnissian, Bran's troublesome half-brother. He cast his eyes about, and as he did so, he caught sight of the bags hanging from the pillars. He walked to one of the bags. "What is in this bag?" he asked. From within, a voice spoke.
"Flour, friend,"
came the reply. Evnissian poked at the bag and felt the body within. He passed his hands across the outside of the bag until he felt a man's head. Evnissian smiled, and he squeezed that head until he could feel his fingers sinking into the brain as the bone of the skull was crushed in his grip. He left that one, placing his hands upon the next. "What have we here?" he asked.
"Flour, friend,"
came the reply. Evnissian played that same game with every man, and soon there was but one left. "What have we here?" he asked.
"Flour, friend,"
came the reply, and thus for the last time did he feel the head of the man within. He squeezed, just as he had with the others, but this time he felt armour upon the warrior's head. Evnissian did not let go until he had killed him. 100 dead warriors surrounded him. Evnissian smiled and sung this englyn. "In this bag there is flour of a kind. Conquerors, defenders, descenders to the grind. Facing fighting men, ready for the hour." Then the two armies entered the house of Bran. The men of Ireland on one side and we all sat on the other. Peace was proclaimed and Gwern was invested with the kingship of Ireland. After peace was made, Bran called to Gwern, who came to him. He then went to Manawydan, and all of us who saw him in that great house loved him. Nissian, son of Aeroswith, beckoned him, and the boy went to him with grace and enthusiasm. Then spoke Evnissian. "Why does the boy, my nephew and my sister's son, not come to me? Even if on this day he were not invested as king, I would like to make friends with him." Bran smiled at his half-brother. "Let him go gladly." And the boy cheerfully went to his uncle. I was there in the house that day. I saw what happened next, and even now it sometimes fills my dreams with nightmares. We knew Evnissian was cruel, but none of us could have imagined what he was to do next. Gwern, the young boy, hugged his uncle, and Evnissian's gaze fell upon us all gathered there. I saw him whisper to himself and to the ear of his nephew, "I declare to the gods, this outrage I shall now commit is one no one here would ever expect." He stood up, taking the boy by his feet, and in one movement, before any of us had the chance to respond, he hurled the boy head first into the fire. I heard Gwern's cries of agony. I heard Branwen scream when she saw her son burning before her. And she tried to jump into the fire to save him, but Bran seized her with one hand, for it was too late. The boy was already dead. With his other hand, Bran seized his shield. Then everyone in the house leapt up, and there was the greatest commotion and uproar ever heard in one house as each side took up arms. Then Morthuid Tuchlion said,
"Hounds of Gwern, beware Morthuid Tuchlion."
As we all went for our weapons, Bran held Branwen between his shield and his shoulder. The battle was brutal. All battle is brutal. But this one had erupted from a moment of such joy that once more, by the actions of Evnissian, had turned from peace to hatred. There was such bloodshed on both sides that first day. But after the battle had subsided, we saw the Irish begin to kindle a fire beneath the cauldron of rebirth. We watched as they loaded their dead into the cauldron until it was overflowing with corpses. The next day, their ranks were filled with those reborn warriors. They stood amongst the ranks of the living in silence, eyes showing no fear, for they had all seen the other world. They yearned to tell of where they had been, but just as a newborn baby can only cry and speak no understood words, so those warriors too stood unable to speak, but fully able to fight. The day's battle was as bloody as before, with countless dead on both sides. As evening fell that dreadful day, I saw movement on the battlefield. It was Evnissian. He was walking amongst the dead in tears. In tears. He was the cause of this mountain of dead men from the Island of the Mighty. Had some regret fallen upon him? I watched as he slowly laid down among the Irish dead warriors. Two Irish men began to collect their dead, to take them once more to the cauldron of rebirth. And they took Evnissian with them. Each warrior was placed within, and I saw Evnissian tumble into that void within the ranks of the Irish dead. The fire was kindled, and it lit up the darkened night sky. But then there was a great explosion, and the cauldron split into four pieces. The Irish dead poured out, still and unmoving, Somehow, the cauldron had been destroyed. The battle was eventually won by the warriors of the Island of the Mighty. But there was no real victory that day. In the end, only 7 of us escaped with our lives. Bran himself was wounded in the foot by a poisoned spear. The 7 men who escaped were Manawydan, Glivai, son of Taran, Anok, Gravai, son of Miriel, Helin, son of Gwyn, myself, and a young bard by the name of Taliesin. I walked to the shattered remains of the Cauldron of Rebirth. It felt as if some age was coming to an end and a new one was about to begin. It was there that I saw the body of Evnissian among the Irish dead. He too lay still. His hands and feet were bruised and burned. In my mind, I saw him within the cauldron, stretching out his arms and legs and pushing with all of his strength. As the cauldron broke into 4 pieces, so Evnissian's heart had broken. He had given his life to save us. Was this Evnissian's redemption? Was that enough after all he had done? I guess only time will tell. Bran had been mortally wounded. The poison was already coursing through his veins, and he was weakening fast. He ordered us to cut off his head and take it to the White Mount in London, there to bury it, facing outwards towards the Channel Sea. "And it will take you a long time," he said. "You will feast in Harlech for 7 years, and you will find my head to be as good company as it ever was when it was on me. Then you must go to Gwales in Pembrokeshire for 80 years. So long as the door towards Aber Henfelin and Cornwall remains closed, you can remain there, and my head will not decay. But as soon as one of you opens that door, you must then make for London and bury my head. Let us go now, across the sea." We cut off Bran's head, and the 7 of us, with Branwen as the 8th, set out back to the Island of the Mighty. This battle will be remembered always. It was the young bard who spoke, Taliesin. If you are a bard well versed in story and song, "I am sure it will," I replied. Taliesin smiled. "I have much of which to tell, with more to come. And you, Pryderi, your tale is not yet over." He looked out to sea. "I feel that this will not be the final time I return in a ship with none but 7 survivors."
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise 1 finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, 3 more fingers for everyone over 60, 2 over 50, 1 over 40, 1 more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, 2 if you're very overweight, and 3 if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up 5 or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Good morning. It's 7:29. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. Yes. This is Between the Worlds, the best of Earth Religions Radio. And we just heard from Dave the Bard and his fine double album, the second branch of the Mabinogi and the Tale of Avron and Avronwen. And of course, this is part of the Ancient Matter of Britain, the four branches and the ancillary tales were compiled by two books held by noble families in Wales and have seen a lot of work since Lady Charlotte Guest, with the help of her reverend friend, first published four books based on each one of the four branches. So what we heard there was the tale of Aeneian and Evnician, and of course Evnician, the troublesome and quarrelsome brother, but also a mighty warrior. We hear there how he managed to penetrate the disguise of the hidden warriors. No flower friend, but armed hosts. And then how he split the cauldron of rebirth. And for those of you who are familiar with Celtic artifacts, you might want to check out the plates from the Gundestrup cauldron. As I mentioned before, this is going to be our last show in the 6 to 8 a.m. Monday morning slot. We are henceforth moving to Friday at 6 to 8 p.m. We'll be able to feature more interviews with artists who are coming into town and also with some of our fine local folks of a spiritual nature. Sadly, I don't think I'll be able to get one person before she leaves for California, but c'est la guerre, right? Lager. All right. Our calendrical information is, as usual, brought to you by the Perpetual Almanac of Folklore by Charles Kightley. January the 28th, shun winter melancholy at this dark season. January 29th, be careful when you cut your fingernails. Listen for the missile thrush. And the missile or mistletoe thrush, also called the hollycock, the stormcock, or Jeremy for January joy, sings loudly at this season, even or especially in rough and tempestuous weather, which her song is said to presage. And there is an old rhyme for when you cut your nails, but we don't really have time to get into that. I'll try and post it on the webpage. January 30th, on this day in 1649, King Charles I was executed at Whitehall. And Andrew Marvel, who knew which side his bread was buttered on, actually wrote, an Horatian ode upon Cromwell's return of 1650. He nothing common dinner mean upon that memorable scene, but with his keener eye the axe's edge did try. Of course, after Cromwell, there was a restoration of the Stuart monarchy in England. And what else happened while we were gone? Well, for those of you of a Scottish persuasion, you may have noted that Burns' night was January the 25th. And we'll just give a short verse from Burns's Address to a Haggis. Fair fire on a sunsy face, great chieftain of the puddin' race. A boon them a' ye take your place, paunch, tripe, or therm. Weel are ye worthy o'er a grace, as langs me erm. Yes, haggis is made from offal, which is not part of the sheep that we generally eat. It was usually the sheep's stomach was taken out, and then there was a mixture of oatmeal and other offal meat, and that's O-F-F-A-L. For people like me who aren't very big on haggis, there's no end of whiskey that will take away the taste, and I prefer not to indulge in the haggis. January the 31st, protect your lambs against cold and predators, and cook wildfowl. Tusser's 500 Points of Good Husbandry of 1575 notes, young broom or good pasture thy ewes do require, warm barn and in safety their lambs do desire. Look often well to them for foxes and dogs, for pits and for brambles, for vermin and hogs. And why is that? Because February was the month of purification. It was named from Februa, where the great Roman feast of purification was. And for modern day pagans, it tends to be known as Imolc, which means in the belly, or Oimilk, which is ewe's milk. In Gaelic, probably from the Irish, this was Fualach, the month of ravaging wolves. In other words, guard your flocks well. Your ewes are bringing forth lambs and need to be tended. And it is still a cold and wintry season. And in Anglo-Saxon, this was known as Salmanoth, the month of cakes now offered to the gods. February 1st was St. Bride's Day, or Imolc, the Celtic feast of spring's awakening. St. Bridget, or a bridey of Kildare, is said to have helped the Virgin give birth to Jesus, whence she is the prototype of pregnant women and midwives, and to have kept Mary's cows, whence her title of Christ's milkmaid. The saint's pagan namesake and predecessor, the Celtic goddess Bridget, was also associated with fertility, childbirth, and cattle. And she was also known as a fantastic smith and poet. On her feast day, Highland girls made the last sheaf of the previous harvest into images of her, which were laid in a decorated cradle called Breed or Bridie's Bed. And from the Carmina Gadelica, this is the day of Breed. The queen will come from the mound. This is the day of Breed. The serpent will come from the hole. On this mystic day, adders were believed to abandon their winter lairs, and the oyster catcher birds, called in Gaelic the Gillibreid, or the servants of Breed, made their appearance, bringing spring with them. February the 2nd was Candlemas, St. Mary's Feast of the Candles, officially the Feast of the Purification and the Presentation of Christ in the Temple. By this season, it should have grown light enough to do most inside work without candles. If Candlemas Day brings snow and rain, winter is gone and won't come again. If Candlemas Day be clear and bright, winter will have another flight. So as we see, Groundhog Day is just a continuation of this custom. It is not something American and brand new. It was carried over across the pond, as it were. Fine weather today is to be feared, since it shows that the worst of winter is still to come. A good farmer should have, on Candlemas Day, half his turnips and half his hay. In other words, be frugal with what you have stored, because you never know what the weather will bring. February the 3rd was St. Blaise's Day, or Blaise Day. Traditionally, a bishop of Sebaste in Armenia, who on his way to execution miraculously cured a boy who had a fishbone lodged in his throat. He is therefore invoked against all throat ailments. And on this day, some churches hold ceremonies of blessing the throats when hallowed candles are tied into the shape of a cross and touched against the thrones of sufferers. February the 4th, the land needs rain this month, and snow is even more beneficial. Snowdrops are generally now blooming. February the 5th, St. Agatha's Day. Seek cures for sore breasts. And February 6th, about Candlemas Day, every good goose should lay. In other words, we have enough light so that your hens and geese should be once again producing eggs. All righty then, it is 7:42 from Damn the Bards album of the second branch of the Mabinogi. We heard A Forest on the Ocean, A House Fit for a King, and Battle of the Cauldron. Okay. And this next piece is for my friend Darnley Brown, who couldn't do his Sounds of Praise yesterday. So here we have the Como Mamas.
You ought to count.
Count your blessings.
Your blessings.
Count your blessings.
And you'll see.
And see what the Lord has done.
You ought to count.
Count your blessings.
Your blessings.
Count your blessings.
And you'll see.
Lord,
I want to hear you
when you call.
Oh, when you call.
When
It's 7:55. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. Yep, still have that cold. That was the Sons of Kemet from Your Queen is a Reptile. And that particular piece was called My Queen is Nanny of the Maroons. Before that, we heard the Como Mamas with Count Your Blessings from their album out on Daptone, Move Upstairs. And we are going to go out of here with a couple of pieces from Noel's Sing We Clear, Bidding You Joy.
Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. Step lightly when you hear us knock. Step lightly and slip back the lock. Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. It's silver without and golden within. Open the great door and let us come in. Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. We've traveled the old year, we'll travel the new. Open the door and let us come through. Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. We're knocking and waiting to bring you good cheer. Come now and open the door of the year. Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. So trip to the door and pull back the pin, and let all these jolly wassailers in. Here we stand at the door of the year. We're knocking and waiting to bring you cheer. Christmas is past, let New Year begin. Open the great door and let us come in. Sing Noel.
Villagers, all this frosty tide, let your doors swing open wide.